Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
All right, I want to get a little business out of the way, although if I ran a business like this, I'd go broke in 2 minutes. Free. Everybody likes that word, and it's true. This Wednesday, I think it's Wednesday, February 1st, 5 o'clock, you can, if you're a sadistic masochistic, you can come and see me in person for 2.5 hours, in which I'm going to offer my very best ideas about, if this economy, the thing I'm doing is called, if the economy is so good, how come I can't find great work? So I'm doing that at the San Francisco Civic Center's main library in the Corrett Auditorium, 5 o'clock. It is free. You don't even think you need to register, so you don't have to worry your little head about it now. Just if you find yourself with nothing to do, I really am, you know, I'm being flipped to try to be a good, modest person here, but I really worked very hard to make it very special. And I have a wonderful singer who you may have heard on this show before, her Jeffrey Givens, who is my career counseling client, her very inspirational story. It's like a Rocky story, but for real. She will be there, and she will sing 4 or 5 songs with me playing the piano. It will be should be educational and entertaining, and it's free. So hope to see you Wednesday and come by and say hello. Okay, enough of that. I promised the librarian I would do that, and so I've done it. Now, this show, as in many of my shows, is about, all about you. No interview, no guest today. It's you and me. I'm going to talk about some basic careers that are what I consider cool yet realistic, and yet I'm going to be, you know, nothing is perfect, so I'll present upsides, downsides, but I want to go right to the phones if you are inclined, if you have a work-related problem of any sort, whether you're 16 or 76. Again, the operative word is free. This is your chance to get me for nothing. Feel free to call whatever your problem is. And you could be, really, you could be a clerk or a CEO, for-profit, non-profit, whatever your issue is, I can usually help. Sometimes people think I'm only focusing on people who are unemployed. You could be well-employed and unhappy. You could be trying to start a business and not know whether it's worthy. Or you could be in business and looking to try to take it to the next level or make your life easier or whatever. All of those are good reasons to call. You know, I think of this in some ways as like, you know, if people are calling in for a business, it's like a Shark Tank, you know, except I've got a little bit of the Kevin in me, that real mean guy who's all about the bottom line, will it work? But there's the other side of me too. So in any case, those are all good reasons to call. If you've got a work-related problem, I call them workovers. I won't pummel you, maybe. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now we're waiting for the calls to come in. These are some cool careers that are realistic. I'm not going to ask you to be an ice cream mate, you know, say, oh, you could be an ice cream taster or a mattress tester or something like that. These are realistic careers that you might want to consider. So first one is a pharmacist, but I'm not talking about being a pharmacist at CVS or Walgreens. No, those are nights and weekends jobs, and it's kind of, you're like a machine just going, cranking through millions of these prescriptions. No, there are some very cool jobs as a pharmacist at universities and research centers. So I'm not saying it's easy to get to be a pharmacist, but for those of you who like a medical careers do require a bunch of school. I think it's a 3-year doctorate after your bachelor's degree. I think that pharmacists, especially at a research pharmacist at a university, an institute, something like that, is a very, very under-the-radar good career to aim for. Another one. People are constantly making fun of accountants. And yes, some accountants, it feels deadening. But there's an enormous range. Some people really love the structure of, you know, rules, and they have to follow these rules, and there's jobs for those. Those tend to be low level. But what's really very rarely understood is that at the CPA level, at a higher level, there's tremendous judgment involved. You know, is it really worth asking for this extra documentation? Is this really worth deducting? Accountants are people who are very much off in a business or a nonprofit making judgments about strategic planning. So it's a very much, and it's a career that ain't going away. Now, yes, your basic routine accounting, that's going to be roboticized, and it already is increasingly. I mean, it started many years ago, you know, with QuickBooks and with TurboTax, but it certainly in the business-to-business world has gotten far more sophisticated. So the basic routinized jobs in accounting that are very subject to automation. But if you're a thinker, but you also like numbers and have a good feel for numbers, that's people don't realize, that's, it's not just knowing the algorithm and what to plug in. It's having a feel. You kind of intuitively can feel number. You think probabilistically. It's a very under-the-radar useful career. I'll talk one more and then we have plenty of calls on the line, so I'm going to go to the phones. This one I plead guilty. My PhD is actually in two fields. One is educational psychology, but the other is in what's called program evaluation, an evaluation of innovation. That is a very cool specialty. Ever more programs, whether they be privately funded or government funded, have an evaluation to see if it was it any good. Can we improve it? Should we scrap it? Should we expand it? And it's a really cool career because you get to see innovation all the time. That's fun. The same way as being a patent lawyer is very fun because you're seeing the cutting edge all the time. But if you're not a lawyer type, being a program evaluator is great. And you don't need to be a statistical genius, really. Even though I had to take 6 damn statistics courses to get my PhD, that was more for the professor's convenience because he liked to teach it than it was really needed. Most program evaluators hire a statistical consultant to deal with the advanced statistics. In most cases, there is no advanced statistics involved. It's very basic. It's, you know, basically you're going to have a little pie chart or a flow chart or averages or, you know, high school math or even junior high school math. So it's a very rewarding career, program evaluator. All right. I think we'll go to the phones now. We've got plenty of calls. So, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello, it's you.
Hi, is this me?
It
Anyhow,
is.
What is the value of sticking with a company that, for all appearances, seems to be dying?
Well, the way you've described it, there is no upside. You should be starting, you know, if it's the Titanic sinking, you don't want to be polishing the brass on the Titanic. You want to be using that fear of it going under to mobilize you to swim to another workplace and really do a good job search. Am I missing something?
At risk of revealing too much in my situation, no. No, and I've heard that from other people. I wanted to hear your opinion.
Well, there you go. Sometimes we're quick, and I'm going to say thank you for the call.
Unless
you're not sure what the heck you want to do leaving this, you want to make a pivot from what you're doing, maybe then it'd be fun for us to talk about options. But if you're simply trying to, you know, go to another company doing kind of what you're doing, I think we're done.
Yeah, that's likely. I appreciate your advice.
A pleasure. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, it's you. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Marty?
Yeah, I hear you beautifully.
Okay, great. Hey, I just wanted to check in and say thank you for all the career advice over the years, and I wanted to give a pitch for the San Francisco Federal Reserve.
Oh.
I came from a finance background and left Wells Fargo in 2013, right before all the shit hit the fan, and really didn't
We're not allowed to say those words. I need to say that just to control the FCC. I don't mind the word personally, but the stupid FCC does, so.
You mean
the crap you're referring to, is that right? Crap is allowed. Okay, continue.
So anyway, one of the things I hadn't thought about so much was sort of a quasi-governmental environment, which is sort of one of those under-the-radar categories that you talk about.
Right.
I want to give a pitch right now for folks who are sort of in their 50s, which I am, and perhaps are finding a door closed to them. The Fed is going through a huge transition right now, and that a lot of people who have been there 25 to 30 years are leaving, and it's opening up a lot of opportunity. So I encourage folks to get to the website, see if there's any kind of a match there with the skill set, and start submitting resumes.
I completely agree. There are so many of these government is so labyrinthine. We delude ourselves into thinking we are this free market, capitalist, private sector-centric society. But there are so many layers of bureaucracy. City government, regional government agencies, there's water boards, there's special education boards, there's all of these under the radars, you know, parks commissions. There are endless numbers, and the Federal Reserve is a beautiful example of something we don't normally think about. What are the kind of interesting, obviously there'd be jobs in finance and for economists there. Tell me a little more, what could intrigue our listeners as to the kind of interesting jobs that exist?
Sure. First of all, let me just kind of put a caveat right now. Because of Mr. Trump's recent federal hiring freeze, we are still somewhat absorbing that. I happen to have landed in HR, and it's my first time kind of being exposed to an HR environment. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of learning the compensation side of the business, the benefit side of the business, as well as talent acquisition and talent development. Mm-hmm. I want to encourage folks to also look at the fact we have a large community outreach entity.
Really?
We've got a very large sort of statistics and research entity.
What in the world does the Federal Reserve do in terms of outreach? I mean, I could see there being a PR person who's sending out press releases about the latest BS statistics about employment,
right,
or whatever, but, you know, which are grossly misleading. But apart from that, what is the outreach?
The outreach is being sure that we're communicating our role and function in all the communities in which we serve and represent.
Okay, what do you do? I mean, I know that there are separate Fed offices in St. Louis and one, you know,
right
in San Francisco. What do you guys do other than set interest rates, monetary and fiscal policy? What do you do?
Well, we actually do a lot of things. I mean, our kind of dual purpose is low inflation and full employment.
Right.
So if you kind of look at those two things, and I don't know if folks are aware, but if you start in Boston as district number one, mm-hmm, you work your way out to the West Coast, we are the last district. We're 12L, mm-hmm, and we're also the largest district. We encompass Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, the Mariana Islands.
So why do we need this huge bureaucracy? Why don't we just have one small 10 people working in D.C. doing the, you know, with that mandate? Why do we need 12L, 1 through 12L, and big bureaucracy with hundreds of people with lots of jobs, notwithstanding the freeze? Why do we need all that?
Well, because each the way that it was formed in 1913, Marty, and I don't want to go into a huge civics lesson here, was
right.
The sort of region needed to be autonomous, and they're kind of addressing needs specific to their region. So that's sort of the beauty of the setup.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't want to be on the line too long. I just want to encourage folks to keep that in mind. Check the website monthly. New postings are appearing, but keep in mind we are going through a little bit of a freeze right now.
Temporary.
It may not be responded to right back.
Yeah, and it really is. And that's a microcosm. It's not just your agency, but, you know, one thing we know is that the government is the bastion of opportunity for people who are in what's called in protected classes, for minorities, for older people. That's not just the Federal Reserve. And so, you know, they are a clearly one of the options of choice for folks who let's just call them protected classes. So I really appreciate your call very much. Oh, by the way, I want to say something on the line. You know, with regard to Trump, he has profound implications for careers in the short term, as you're saying, in terms of the freeze. I am going to make a prediction for what it's worth, just simply because I think it might affect your career planning. I really believe he will not last 2 years. I really think there is never in my entire lifetime, there has never been as mobilized an attempt from all quarters to drive him out of office, whether it be from the media or they're papering him with lawsuits. As soon as somebody lands at the JFK and doesn't get through and is Muslim, there was a lawsuit immediately filed. There was the plan. I was reading The Nation, and in The Nation, there was said that's the plan, is to paper him to death. To get him, to make him, to throw, the title of the article is, throw sand into the wheels of every Trump initiative. So between the media, the women's movement, minority activism, lawsuits, I think that there, and he does not look healthy to me. I'm not an MD, but, you know, he's very obese, certainly, and his face is quite red. I mean, he seems like, and he's not a laid-back guy. This is a guy who's a candidate for a stroke, you know, or a heart attack. And so I know he got a clean bill of health, but I think he will either, from all the stress, have a medical event, and I wish that on nobody, or he will get driven from office, or maybe at some point, I mean, his, you know, and I am not being political here, but every economist from left to right agrees that protectionism is in the end short-sighted in terms of gaining jobs and long-term a nightmare. And a blanket extreme vetting for Muslims is a nightmare in terms of increasing terrorism risk. Both the left and right feel this way. So he's clearly incompetent and hubristic. So in my judgment, he will be out of office, and therefore these freezes, I don't care if it's Mike Pence taking his place, I think that we will not have this kind of extremist policy that is right now just shocking everybody in his first week of office, or, you know, anyway. That's my thought, so for what it's worth. Anyway, I thank you a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, and this comes not, I'm not some wild leftist. I'm a moderate guy. But I think that this is, you know, this is actually one more little parenthetical, and then I will get back to calls. I think that we will look historically back on this Trump presidency as the best thing that could ever happen to the Democratic Party. Because the perception will be that this is the best that the Republicans and conservatives can come up with. And that will, because this has been a blip, there's been an overall leftward turn in this country in every, on every dimension, which I won't, that's out beyond the scope of this discussion, in terms of domestic policy, international policy. And here we're having this reverse blip, and we have Donald Trump as the manifestation of this reversal. I think, especially given the demographic trends, the media bias, which is, there's no one could argue that there isn't a leftist media bias, between those two things, population trends and the media, and this absolutely embarrassing example of what a, quote, Republican should be like, I think that this is, we're going to be moving ever leftward with all of its implications for jobs. There'll be more government jobs, for sure. More jobs helping the poor, minorities, disabled, etc. The unions, the traditionally, let's say, the Democratic Party's core constituency. And as you make your career planning, that would seem to be a very macro consideration. And, you know, nobody has a monopoly on truth. But that, at least from, you know, for any of you who think I have some credibility, that's my best shot. Okay, now let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you with your career? Hello. Are you there?
Hello, is this me?
It is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I own a small business for a long time. Mm-hmm. It is in a very competitive field. The industry requires activity, and there is a premium, youth and vibrancy, and staying on trend. I've done all those.
You're cutting out every second or two. Is there something with your phone? Because you're very clear when you come through, but then there's silences every 2 seconds. Are you on some kind of a voice-activated phone or something? Or
no, it's probably the area I'm in. What should I continue to say?
Well, all I heard was that you own a small business that's competitive and that it's a youth-oriented field. That's all I heard.
Youth-oriented and staying on trend. Regarding my product, I've definitely stayed on trend. However, I have run my business very, very poorly, squandered a lot of opportunities, made a lot of mistakes, financial and otherwise, and have not stayed up with technology and marketing and all the things. And I'm feeling like my business is starting to sputter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And given the type of business I'm in, you might say a come to Jesus moment, where do I just sort of
you hire somebody by the hour for at a relatively high rate to help you with a technology plan? What do you need? You don't want to get crazy about technology, but what's the minimum you need to do? And with regard to business, where are you squandering opportunities? Pay a little bit of money, and maybe we'll play a little bit here on the phone together right now for free. And then if you need somebody to help you with that, because it's simply anathema to you, the business side, you hire somebody inexpensively to implement that smart person strategy, right? Because it sounds like you're just starting, the business is starting to fall down. It's not dying. So
right.
Would you like me to try to help you come up with something to try to improve your business in our phone conversation right now?
Yes, I would. But my real question is, at 60 years old in this type of field, is it a waste of my time?
Not at all, necessarily. First of all, you got to tell me. I've been trying to respect your desire to not reveal your business. Not to reveal your business, but now I can't help it. Tell me what's your business.
I'd rather not say.
And I can't help you. It's too vague. You know, I can't say, you know, 60, first of all, 60 is that there are some people who are 60 or half in the grave, and some are 60 who have, you know, 30 years ahead of them. You know, my wife is in that category, and she's got
all
a million
right.
years.
Okay, you've convinced me, the catering and events business.
Okay, so what's this big secret? You know, I was thinking you were a coke dealer. What are you talking about? The latest trends in illegal drug use? You know, you're catering. Come on. So
yeah, I know.
Okay.
Right?
So let's talk about there's all kinds of catering. There's catering to stuff your face, there's organic, vegan, local and sustainable catering, there's kosher catering. What's your niche?
Primarily weddings and high level social events.
Okay. And there are different kinds of weddings. There are those that are the country club kind of weddings where it's $5 a shrimp, you know. And then there are weddings that are at the Elks Club, and then there are weddings at the temple. If there was a goddess, where would the goddess say your niche either is or should be? Because we want to focus your marketing efforts so you're not spread too thin.
Moderate high end.
And since you're self-conscious about you being older, should you focus more on weddings for that are healthier for older audience, where, you know, somebody who's 60 or 70 years old gets married for this, you know, again or whatever, maybe even for the first time, and they don't want to be serving bacon with bacon wrapped hot dogs with cheese?
Well, the market is millennials, and we don't need to talk about.
You sure? Now, I understand
that type of
you're competing.
Client.
That's where you're competing with everybody else. I don't worry about competing. You know, you're obviously sound like a little business. You don't want to compete in a massive market. You want to. There was a phrase that came out a few years ago called the long tail. There's a lot of money to be made at the long tail of the distribution, even if it's a small percentage of people. But if you're focusing, let's say I'm just making this up. If you're focusing on healthy or, you know, really healthy stuff for older people and market only for, brand yourself that way, you can both target what you're making. Your dishes can be perfectly tuned to them, and you don't have to market broadly to the whole wedding market and pay to go to wedding fairs and all this other stuff. Why wouldn't you pick that? Why wouldn't you use your age to your advantage?
Mm-hmm.
You don't
good
like
point.
It.
No,
that's a good
no,
point.
I
okay.
like it.
All right, good.
It's
so that's
hard to face age.
Well, you know, it's true for all of us. Believe me, it's the one thing I can deal with almost anything. But when I hear about people of my age peers getting sick, you know, I'm starting to get to that age where there's some people getting serious diseases. I don't like it. I hate it. I look at wrinkles, and, you know, I look at a picture of myself at 25, and I look at my picture now, and I say I puke. I can't believe it's the same person. So, but that week, I can't help you with that one. That's the one problem I can't help
okay.
you. So, you're going to be 60. Hopefully, you're going to be 70. What we care about is for the next 3 months, what the hell are you going to do to build your business and have fun and make money? That's what we're talking about. Yes?
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay.
Okay, it's not. So what you're saying, it's not too late.
No,
that's
of course
question.
Not. There are plenty of people who run. My father ran his business when he was 82 and loved it. And he had, and you know what? And mainly people who were buying, he went to a little clothing store. People who bought clothing were young people. It really, you know, I'm not a kid either, but I think that because I'm so grateful for every moment I have, and I really value doing work and doing what I do best, which is thinking on my feet. You can feel the energy in my voice here. I'm grateful for it. So if you like what you're doing, that's the other core question. Do you like catering? Let's start with basics.
Love it. Love it.
There you
love
go. What are you doing? I don't care if you got health problems or whatever. Then you, if you love catering, delegate where you need to, but do the part. What are the parts that you love and that you're good at, really, really good at?
The production.
Okay, great.
And the sales.
Great. Well, those are very, very important things. Okay, so... Where are you? So now we've come up with a niche. Where else are you struggling in terms of the marketing, in terms of getting help, in terms of what are you really missing?
100% administration and accounting.
Beautiful. That's the easiest thing in the world. You don't do that. It's obviously not in your personality. There are plenty of people, if you could hire 5 hours a week or five, you know, whatever minimum number you need to do your bookkeeping or accounting. That's, you know, every business in the world outsources what they don't do well. I can't fix anything. So I was so grateful to pay $60 an hour yesterday to have a handyman came over to fix my windows, which weren't working right, to replace a screen that had rotted away, to one speaker had stopped working, and he found out where the cut in the line was, you know, and the door, my door was had dropped down. He was going to lift it up. You think if I did that, it would take me 9 years. That's where you spend money, and there's an accountant to do there, a bookkeeper who loves bean counting, who loves, as I was saying earlier, some people love the structure of accounting and love helping you out. And helping to make your catering business. I want you to get your butt off the phone right now, and I want you to go to Yelp.com. Now, I realize that not all Yelp reviews are legitimate. Some of them are bad reviews stuck by your competitors. That's happened to me. But why don't you go on Yelp, look for bookkeeper or accountant, find somebody who's the way she or he is described just makes you feel good, and you pick up the damn phone and you say, would you come over and let's try a few hours? What do you think?
I think it's great. I think it's really needed the father figure to tell me that. Thank you.
Brother. I'm not that old. Jesus. Right. So focus on the niche, though. Focus your marketing efforts. Now, you don't want to... There's 10 zillion people who want to, forgive my language, suck at the tit of the young millennials who have wanted their dream day, their magical day, their... You know, everybody's going after that money. Why don't you find a niche? You know, you're worried about your age. Use your age to your advantage. And it's also more ethical. If you're making healthier foods, everybody feel... Whenever I go to one of these weddings, I feel such approach avoidance. I love to eat fattening, delicious things, but I don't want to. And if I came to a wedding and they had these delicious things that weren't fattening, I would be happier and healthier. So focus on making delicious, healthy things for old. Because when you're young, you don't give a crap. You think you can survive everything. You can eat anything. You can eat bacon three times a day. But you know, when you're older, you can't and don't want to. Make delicious, amazing things at a fair price. Don't be a pig. I hate the $5 shrimp caterers. Be a mensch. Hire, you know.
My philosophy is definite. Got it. No, I completely agree with you.
All right. It was a pleasure having you call Work with Marty Nemko.
Right.
You can send
Thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Nemko. Really.
You can send me a shrimp. You send me a shrimp. You know, overnight. Overnight. That was a joke. Okay. See you. All right.
Take care, bye.
Bye. You're listening to Work with. You're listening to Food Talk. No. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko here at KALW. I am doing workovers on callers. If I'll give out the phone, and we've got callers on the line, but you won't have to wait too long, I don't think, partly because I talk so fast. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, self-employed, unemployed, clerk, CEO, 1676, whatever, the price is certainly right, zero zippo nada, call in for a workover. I will get to you, no question. Phone number 415-841-4134, that's 415-841-4134. And before we go back to the phones, I was at the top of the show, I was promising, and I promo during the week, that I was going to be talking about cool yet realistic careers, and I've shared some. Now I'm going to share some more. Forensic psychologist. There's a psychologist under every rock here in the Bay Area, but they're one of the, and I'm planning to have somebody on the show who is a forensic psychologist. What could be more interesting than trying to determine what they should do with a rapist based on his psychological, or her, I guess, psychological profile? Or is that person really mentally competent, or is the Twinkie defense BS just to try to get the person off? I think forensic psychology is really cool, and it's so much more under the radar than the typical psychologist. I want to work with children and families. You know, there's a million of them. Again, as you know, one of my core beliefs is going under the radar. You don't want to fight ruthless competition for the few good jobs. But if you've got this little niche and you stay focused, you're laser focused on becoming a rock star, a god or goddess in your field, you will both be free from the imposter syndrome and you will be in great employment. I just was watching CNN or whatever, and they had a guy on who was an expert at fibers, at forensic fibers. He knew everything about how to interpret fiber bits from after a crime. Now, nobody ever grew up saying, Mommy, when I grow up, I want to be a fiber expert. But by focusing on not just being, oh, I'm going to be a CSI, crime scene investigator, or some kind of a, you know, criminologist, he got really narrow in focus. He didn't say, oh, man, I really get bored with that. I think I need to dabble. No. The key to being well-employed is to become an expert. It was like what Malcolm Gladwell wrote about the 10,000 hours. If you're a dabbler, a master of, jack of all trades, master of none, you fail. Unless you're a true genius. There are some geniuses who, you know, have achieved real excellence in many things, but most people can't. Even my wonderful advisor, probably the smartest guy I've ever met, Michael Scriven, by his own admission, he's accomplished far less than he would because he's addicted to novelty. Please become an expert at something, and if you got some, I'm not asking you to spend 80 hours a week at it, but spend the time, whether it be forensic accounting or fiber analysis, or being an expert at refining the algorithm for Pandora. I'm amazed at what Pandora's musical picks. Whatever it is, become a rock star. Spend as much discretionary time as you can becoming the rock star, and then you'll be employable. Okay? All right. One other career before I go back to the phones. Everybody knows that health informatics is a big deal. So much more. There'll be electronic medical records. It's ever more complex. People are moving from provider to provider, and it really kills me when I see somebody, they go and they have this full set of exams, and then get entered in the hospital and make them take the exams again because the medical records weren't completely coordinated, or they're admitted to the hospital, and then pre-surgery, they end up redoing the tests. There's nothing more both cost-effective as well as annoyance and pain-preventive than having really smart electronic medical records. If you like working alone with a headset on in front of a computer, that field ain't going away. Medical records technician or medical informatics is much more about providing computer-based information to doctors and nurses and other healthcare practitioners. We are seeing a revolution in the quality of the information that computers are providing to doctors and nurses to assist in diagnosis and treatment. IBM has something called Watson, and they just recently completed a study in which they compared doctors that were oncologists who were making cancer treatment recommendations to patients based on their just subjective judgment versus those that didn't use their subjective judgment at all but had to use the recommendations that got generated from the computer Watson, equal in terms of patient outcomes. So that is a field of the future, medical informatics. It was like if I were advising a son or daughter who had any kind of interest in data, analysis of data, artificial intelligence, I think that medical informatics, especially because we are, notwithstanding Trump, and I'm supposed to call him President Trump, but I have such disdain for him that I'm just calling him Trump. Notwithstanding Trump, I really profoundly believe that in the arc of your career, we are going to be headed towards single-payer healthcare and covering every human being who's in the 50 states. And that's going to the system is already crushed. The medical system is already overwhelmed. And one of the only potential saviors is when they can have brilliantly artificial intelligence-based diagnosis, certainly as an adjunct to doctors and nurses. So you're getting on that. As I look at you, because you're picking a career, you're talking about a 10, 20, 30-year time horizon. I am optimistic that medical informatics is going to be a clear winner in the same way as when Dustin Hoffman was in The Graduate in 1969 and some guy whispers, the future is plastics, right? Okay, now let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm not giving out the number because there's someone in the call is on the line. So kick back, enjoy your latte, and hopefully what I say to my listeners will be of help to you. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Is it my turn?
It is.
Hi, Marty. I am kind of an outside-the-box person as far as my career path has been. I have two part-time jobs in the school district. One is classified IA.
Instructional assistant, that means classified. You're not a union-protected teacher, okay? Go ahead.
Correct. But my other job is certificated. I have a certificate in adult ed, and I teach ESL in the evening to immigrants.
Right.
I love both my jobs. It's not great money, but it does pay some bills. Fortunately, I have a partner who's working as well. That's a different topic. Anyway, what I would like to pursue as possibly something to develop for the future is that I lucked into a proofreading gig on the side. I'm working for one company right now. They send me something once or twice a month. They have they're a tech company, and I'm not super techy, but I'm not tech averse. And so I do some proofreading and copy editing of these newsletter articles that they put out.
I'm going to interrupt you. I'm guessing you want more of that. Why don't you leverage you're teaching ESL. There are, for example, either IEPs that are written by school psychologists who don't write well and could use an editor, and you could market to that. Or there are many people for whom English is not their first language, either in business or in education or whatever, who need to issue reports and things like that. How do you feel about either of those niches?
Well, I would rather go toward the corporate end of things because they have more disposable money. Teachers don't have that much extra money to hire somebody to write IEP reports.
School psychologists. Those IEPs are not written by teachers. They're written by school psychologists.
Right.
But anyway, that's fine.
But for example, I had a student at one point who was pretty high up in her company, and she was very self-conscious about her email,
right,
and always
exactly.
wanted me to look at her emails
precisely.
And help her edit them.
Precisely.
I don't really want to get a big contract to mm-hmm. work on a particular project, but rather do kind of what I'm doing with this newsletter, or help individuals with proofreading and whatever writing they have to do for.
What I would do there, I wouldn't go corporate then. I would go, look, there are many students who are college students and graduate students who are not native speakers of English, and who are desperate to want to make their reports, their edit, their term papers and whatever good. And so what I would do if I were you, And this is not unethical. I'm not asking you to rewrite their papers for them at all. But what an excellent writing lesson it would be. If you, for example, if they send you, let's say somebody who was born in another country and they've got a term paper, and they send you their first draft, and you use this track changes feature simply on it, and you note all your changes in it, that is the best English lesson they'll ever get. That's what they should be getting from their English professors, but the English professors are too damn concerned about their research, and they have too many students to do it carefully. But if they're hiring you and paying you, say, $100 or $200 to edit their essay, they are getting absolutely customized one-on-one feedback. What do you think about that?
That's a possibility. I'm thinking more in terms of people who write at their business, not students.
I know, and you know what? And it's fine. Then I'm going to ask you to. I got it. So, yes, you know, if I were just literally accepting your premise as the valid one, I would say, fine, contact the human resources department at a company that either your husband or your friends know, or simply one that you're interested in, and say that you're available, you know, and especially we're in the high-tech world. You know, I have a client right now who's a physicist, and he's interested in, there are two physics-related firms here in Berkeley. One is Bio-Rad, and the other is Thermo Fisher. You know, if you know, contacting their human, and they have tons, because the tech field is filled with H-1B visas, people from China, people from even India whose English is very different. If you want to go the corporate route, I would find a local company, contact their HR department, say you're looking on an occasional basis to provide editing for high stakes people whose English is not their first language, or you could, I think that given that you're only looking for small quantities, I think you would actually find it more rewarding and maybe make a bigger difference dealing with these students, because they are so motivated. The student wants to get out of the damn college without paying ever more tuition, and they know they need to get a decent grade. They're very motivated to pay to have you edit their essay, and because they're so thirsting for that feedback, they're at their formative time of their life in college where they're supposed to learn how to write. Giving them that feedback could probably do more good for them and in turn society than maybe helping somebody with their emails. What do you think?
I think that, for one thing, college students don't necessarily have the kind of money to put towards that kind of thing.
Yes, they do.
I'm making $50 an hour editing these articles, and I can knock it out in a very short time.
Okay.
And I have a $50 minimum. So if they send me three paragraphs and that's all it is, then I can do it in 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I really think that companies have more disposable income and less time to deal with these kinds
Fair enough.
Of problems. I'm hoping to use For example, the company I'm working for now, I've gotten very positive feedback.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you for a time. I got it. You're telling me that you sound like you know exactly what you want to do. So why would you not, to get more of that, why would you simply not contact the human resources departments at a couple of local companies? Why do you need any more input from me from that,
well,
or is that what you need?
Would it be okay to ask this CEO for a
no.
recommendation?
No. No. CEO's way too high for this. Oh, you mean the CEO of your current company? That's also too high.
Yeah.
That's too high a level person. Unless it was a very tiny company, the CEO didn't hire you. Who hired you?
Well, he did, actually. He.
Well, then fine.
He asked someone that I happen to know if they knew of a proofreader. He put him in touch with me. He asked me how much I would charge. I researched.
Okay, got it. Fine. Obviously, that makes sense. If you, you know, if obviously if you know the CEO and the CEO is happy with your work, yes, the best source of new business is your old business. So it certainly seems appropriate. I want to thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi, it's your turn. Are you there? Hi.
Are you there?
I am.
All right. All right. Hey, Zubir, this is us. We're on the line now.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Hi, Marty. We've been listening to you for many years. At least I have, and I think you're pretty awesome and fantastic with your advice.
Thank you.
We are planning to start a little home business. You know, basically, we've been raising chickens and... harvesting honey from about 4 beehives and...
Now, wait a minute. Are you one of those people in my backyard, next to my backyard, who's raising chickens, and at 5 in the morning I'm hearing all this squawking, and I'm feeling like having chicken fricassee because of that? What? You don't do that, do you? You don't do it in your backyard, do you?
No, well, we're not raising any... We don't have any roosters.
Good. Okay, well, I'll tell you. If you were roosters, I would hang up on you as an act of civil disobedience. Just like if you were one of those gardeners who had leaf blowers, you know, those noise-making machines when people could use a rake, I'd hang up on you too. But I'm glad. Okay, you only have hens, not roosters. Okay, go ahead.
Well, my neighbor does have roosters, and guess what? His neighbors think that the rooster at least is much more pleasing than a lot of the dogs that are in this neighborhood that bark consistently and...
They both stink. They're both horrible. I hate them both. Okay. I love my little doggy, but a barking dog is also annoying. Continue.
So anyway, so beehives, harvesting honey. We've got about 150 pounds of honey. And anyway, so we're thinking of doing this as a business. Where
honey is a commodity now. There's too many honey. I've seen an explosion in the last 10 years of this kind of clover honey and that kind of clover. You walk into a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's or whatever, there's 19 kinds of honey. That's a hobby. That's
yeah,
not
but
career.
I disagree, because if you go to the local farmers market, you'll realize that the honey is selling at a very high rate only because it's considered local honey, and local honey is very healing for a lot of people who have all kinds of allergies and stuff like that, and only local honey is helpful to you. So if you take this honey out of this area, it has no value. The value of local honey is very high. In fact, they say that honey local to the city of New York is selling at $40 and $40 a pound.
I understand. What I'm saying is there's too many people doing that. You're late to the... It's like if in 1990 you said you want to open a cigar store, I'd say you're too late. In 1983, there were no cigar stores and there was money to be made. You're late to the party. Too late.
Well, that's not the only thing we're doing, but we want to just go, you know, help people set up a whole system in the backyard, like harvesting rainwater, as well as composting and...
No, you got to pick one thing. So
my backyard is a functioning farm as you can describe it.
But it doesn't generalize. You're talking to me now. Now we're talking business, you know. And if I'm talking to business, if you want to focus on helping people create fully functioning, a lot of composting, I'm not sure that requires a course. I'm not sure that's a business model. I love to agree when I can, but I'm not convinced that that's a business. There's enough money, and I don't think you're scalable enough to make big money on the local honey thing. I don't like either
idea. We're not looking to get really rich off of this. Something just that, you know, can help one or two people make a living. And for me personally, it's going to be a business, a side business, or whatever.
Yeah, and as I said, if it's a business that I don't think you can make money on anymore, helping two other people to start and therefore lose money in the honey business, I think is a mistake.
Well, like I said, honey is not the only thing. We're going to do rainwater harvesting, gray water system set up.
Gray water, the drought appears to be over, so gray water is no good. Composting doesn't feel like it's going to require that much assistance, and the honey is a commodity. I love to agree with you, especially when you praised me so much. You thought I was awesome. But a part of being awesome is being honest. I don't like any of those three ideas.
Okay. I appreciate your input, and thank you very much.
Okay. At least it's honest, you know. I'm positive where I can, but I'm tough where I must. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, am I on?
You are.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. My name is Annette, and I'm actually local. I'll give you a couple praises. This is actually my first time listening to you, but...
I like everything you say. It's just wonderful.
Thank you.
And I love what you said about Trump. I was so hoping somebody would say that this is not going to last.
It's not going to last.
That just gives me hope. Okay, my question is this. I have basically three jobs, and that's only because one of them I love to do on the side. But my problem is I think I'm just selling myself short.
Okay.
And I need some assistance on where to go for information on how to price myself, how
okay.
to qualify myself. First career for benefits is flight attendant. Second career is an auditor. I audit invoices for cruise stays, calculate tax exemptions, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a numbers person. I love
mm-hmm.
numbers. You
mm-hmm.
were talking about numbers earlier, and yep. I'm that kind of person.
Great.
So the other one, that third job, is like a bookkeeper on the side. So
uh-huh.
yes, you are right. Bookkeepers are in demand.
Yep.
People that can manage numbers and organize somebody's books and paperwork is very much in demand. I constantly get people asking me to add them to my client list, and I just can't do it. So
yep.
I can't. So what happens is that because I have this limited time to give to the bookkeeping side,
mm-hmm.
I find myself doing a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there, and not knowing how to charge because I may not be on the computer for an hour doing what I need to do. It may just be 15 minutes, but yet I'm utilizing all this other time and not really knowing how to charge a client.
Well, normally, you know, you certainly, it's appropriate to take a lesson from the lawyers. The lawyers are a little, make a too fine a point of it. They charge in 6-minute increments. But why isn't there a reason, you know, I normally have a rule that if I take less than 15 minutes on something, I usually just give it free to a client or whatever. But if it's 15 minutes or more, I charge them for the fraction of an hour. Why wouldn't you simply charge in 15-minute increments, which is very appropriate?
I think it's keeping track of it all, kind of. You know, it's just one more thing that I have to keep track of now.
I'm very informal about it. I mean, I'm going to be really, for what it's worth, it may not be the best way, but I also don't like to be too minute about it all. So I just have a gut feeling, I know that when one of my clients emails me, and I tell them this up front, by the way, that I answer quick emails for free, no problem. But when it gets to be, I can feel like it's, oh, this is more than some little email. And then I just, afterwards, I kind of estimate. Was this roughly 15 minutes? Or was this 30 minutes? Or was 45 minutes? No record keeping, no nothing. And the way I do billing, I don't do billing because billing's a pain in the butt. I for every one of my clients, when they come in person, they have to pay by, you know, check or PayPal. But I keep a credit card on file in case for things like that. When they ask me something that's going to take some time, I simply charge their credit card. So there's no record keeping. There's no, it's not formal. And I probably lose a few bucks, but I don't care. It's so easy. Is it simply a matter of figuring that you're entitled to charge for anything that takes 15 minutes or longer, and then you just estimate it, and you just charge their credit card so you're not worrying about sending a stupid bill for 20 minutes. Does that make sense?
Right, so you charge immediately after the service.
Absolutely. Exactly
what
I do.
And where, in your opinion, what is a fair hourly rate for a bookkeeper?
Depends how good you are, but my first intuition says 30 to 45 an hour, somewhere in there.
Right, I price myself at 35. Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
And again, if you're overloaded with business, then you make it 40. You know, that's a mm-hmm. fair market value, and it's not, you're not being a pig. $40 an hour for a good bookkeeper is fair. It's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
You know, 45 isn't. I mean, when you start to hit 50, then when you start saying, is that kind of an account? But anywhere in that space, given my sense of things, is just.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fair. Fair to everybody. Fair to you, fair to them.
Right. Right. Okay.
I'm hearing some hesitancy in your voice. Am I missing something?
No, it's just that only because I tend to do this out of love to help somebody. You know,
you're entitled to make a living. You're not entitled to be a pig, but you're entitled to make a living.
True. So you know, I do understand that 35 to 40 an hour is very fair.
It's very fair.
Increment that.
Remember when you started the conversation, you said to me you thought you were shortchanging yourself. Well, I'm only asking you to be fair to yourself and to the cosmos. And there's nothing wrong with making 35 or 40 an hour. Nothing.
Right. Okay, so it seems strange because 15 minutes would be $8.75.
So I charge $10.
So
I would either charge $10 or, you know, just And, you know, just you don't have to be that, you know, a numbers person, but you don't have to be anal about it. Be human. Be ethical about it, and you're fine.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. I love these calls. They're so diverse. They're great. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hey, Marty. A couple callers ago, the woman who was doing proofreading and copy editing.
Right.
That gave me a really great idea because I'm in a position where I'm working through the interview and credentialing process with a large corporation here. It looks like I'm going to get hired, but their process, it's going to take them like 8 to 12 weeks.
I know. They can actually, it's unbelievable. Yep.
Right. So I'm looking for some short-term, low-hanging fruit. My language skills are excellent. I have a, you know, master's degree in education and a doctorate. So I know how to write.
Doctorate in what? What's your doctorate in?
Psychology.
What kind of psychology?
Clinical.
Okay, as in traditional, like object relations or cognitive therapy. What's your specialization?
Well, that's not my question.
I know, but it's a useful background as I'm trying to come up with a niche for you. It's useful to have. I mean, that's pretty foundational. Well, you know, a PhD is a fairly major commitment of effort. You don't want to tell me? You don't have to tell me.
Well, I think I found my niche, but here's my question for you. I'm not sure. I think this may be kind of an ethical dilemma. Do high school seniors who are this time of year writing their applications,
right,
their essays for college, are they allowed to hire editors?
Oh, it's a great question. It's a matter of nuance here. It is an absolute ethical question. The sweet spot, what I think is the most that you can do and the best you can do, and it's cosmically ethical, is to realize that the college application essay is maybe the best opportunity for a student to understand his values, his skills, his limitations, etc. And it's a real opportunity for him or her to show integrity. So if you
I've got an idea. Let me throw this out for you.
Okay.
I can market myself as a college application coach.
Right.
I can offer coaching, tutoring, editorial support.
Stay focused. Focused on stay focused on the editorial support. Say, I can coach you on your application essay so that it brings out the best in who you are. Asking them great questions about who they are, their visions, the human being that they're honestly trying to portray to college. What are they going to bring to the campus community that would be a useful thing? How could that be demonstrated? What anecdotes in their life prove it? And then they write a first draft, and then you carefully with them work on editing it so it's an excellent English lesson. That ends up being an amazing experience as a personal growth experience, as well as increasing their chance of admission without crossing ethical boundaries.
Right, because my orientation psychologically is humanistic, person-centered, very strength-based, and I've got the educational, you know, experience and credential.
Yeah, fine. But
final question, because I know we're running out of time here. How do I market this? Do I just go put myself on Craigslist?
I wouldn't. I think this is too high stakes a thing. What I would do would be, you're not looking for a million clients, you're looking for a few clients. I would make a list of the 5 or 10 or 20 people whom you most know, who know a lot of people in this age bracket or whatever, and send them an email and just speak, you know, it's not a marketing thing. I'd write an email that says something like the following.
Marty, I'm going to stop you right there because I do not know anybody who knows anybody who could help me in that way.
Then I would do a free workshop at a high school. It can't be low income because they're not going to be able to afford to pay you. But maybe blue collar, where there's less sophisticated people, not a rich person's, because they've got all kinds of sophisticated parents and whatever who are already hiring college counselors. I would offer the PTA at a blue collar, or the head of counseling at a blue collar high school, a free workshop on the art of creating an application essay that is both successful and an excellent vehicle for personal growth. And I think that could be, after that free workshop, which you'd give away a lot of great information, as much as you could, that would still result in you getting some clients. What do you think?
That works for me because that's a strategy that I have used in the past.
There you go. Okay, thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Right on. Thank you, Marty.
Take care. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, is it me?
It is.
Oh, okay. Hi, Marty. Great fan of yours. Appreciate all of your advice.
Thank you.
So I'm actually a software engineer in the Bay Area, and I work in a consumer electronics company and pretty much in the media field.
Mm-hmm.
I am also pursuing my PhD part-time, and mm-hmm. I've been invested in it for about 3.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's pretty much I work in the same technologies, but the field of application is...
You're cutting out. You work in what? I didn't hear that.
Oh, sorry. So I work in a tech company in the Bay Area,
right.
And I'm also pursuing my PhD part-time.
Right.
And I've invested about 3.5 years in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the PhD itself is in computer science, where I work on common technologies that I could use at work, but mm-hmm. the application is completely different for conflict of interest reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the point where I'm kind of torn because my company, once I get the PhD, it's not going to make a terrible change to my career path. So, what are your thoughts on part-time PhDs while working full-time? Are they worth pursuing, or am I just kidding myself?
How far, you put in 3.5 years, how far are you from getting the degree?
I'm about a little more than halfway done.
So you've got another 3 years to go.
Yes.
And are you getting a free ride? Is the company paying, or are you paying?
Yes. The company's paying.
Company's paying. How much of what you're learning there could be applicable to you, either in your current job or the future? How much of it is practical, and could you make it more practical, or is it not?
In the future, yes, but right now I'm at the point where the fields are completely orthogonal. To just give you a little bit more background, my PhD is in medical informatics, I pretty much use graphics to similar to what you were just talking, graphics to aid radiologists make decisions.
Great.
And my work is pretty much, I use similar graphics technology, but
mm-hmm.
it is more in the video processing pipeline, so more in movie playback. So the technologies are the same, but the application is completely different.
Okay, listen, I've got to interrupt because we're almost out of time. So what do you think of the following idea? Because I'm so bullish on medical informatics, what if I said just really, complete that PhD, but see if you can streamline it. See if you can do it more quickly and more focused. Focus on what you'd consider very cool and very appropriate for you, and then keep your network alive so that after you finish, you're not chained to this particular company. How does that feel to you as a model?
I think that sounds good, and I think that was what I was hoping to hear, but perfect.
Okay. I'll quit while I'm ahead. Thank you very much. I apologize to all the rest of you who are on the line. We are out of time. Quickly again, I will be doing a free live presentation at San Francisco Civic Center this Wednesday, February 1st, 5 o'clock, at the Coretta Auditorium, which is in the main public library. I'm going to be offering my best fresh career advice, as well as going to be very entertaining. I have an amazing singer. Jeffrey Gibbons, who's going to be singing songs. She's my career counseling client. Tell her story. It's amazing. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nenko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Great calls. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers and calls and a switch sides in the middle debate between my wife, Dr. Barbara Nenko, and me. The issue, is it wiser to major in the sciences or the arts? Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nenko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.